Supporting WHYY, Simpson Meadows is a retirement community in Downingtown, PA in Chester County. Managed by Simpson Senior Services, Simpson Meadows is a not-for-profit continuing care retirement community that includes memory care, respite, assisted, and independent living suites and apartments. Specially designed neighborhoods and trained staff provide assistance, when needed, with daily tasks to help residents remain as independent as possible. More at simpsonmeadows.org.
I'm Tom McDonald, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Heller is off this evening. Philadelphia advocates seeking to bring in more money from the city from Comcast as part of the next franchise agreement will host a rally tomorrow afternoon at City Hall. They're hoping to keep the heat on a set of negotiations that have been very private so far. WHYY's Bill Hangley has more.
Councilman Bobby Heenan calls Comcast a good partner for Philadelphia, but he thinks the city's new franchise deal could help the company become a great partner.
We could do better as a first-class city. We could do better with them in their hometown. I mean, I think we have the opportunity to set a platinum agreement here. Technology has changed over the past 15 years, and we want to make sure that our concerns are heard by the negotiating team.
The Comcast franchise is a 15-year contract under which the cable giant pays the city a fee in exchange for access to public streets and infrastructure. Advocates and council members have a long list of things they'd like to see included in the next deal, including guarantees of faster and more affordable internet service, stronger consumer protections, and more support for Philadelphia schools. But both the city and Comcast have been very quiet about their negotiations so far. City officials say they're on track to present council with a formal proposal sometime in October. If council members don't like what they see, they could hold their own hearings to try to put their own stamp on the deal. Hannah Sassaman of the Media Mobilizing Project says there's no telling how long the whole process could take.
I don't think we can speculate on what's going to happen. The last time that this negotiation went through, I was a college freshman. The next time this negotiation goes through, my four-year-old will be 19, and God willing, she'll be a college freshman. And so I think that the point is that there isn't a roadmap for how these things get done.
Sassaman says her group will continue to use public pressure like the planned rally to try to press for concessions from Comcast. A spokesman for Mayor Nutter says the city will continue to press for the best deal possible, and Comcast officials say the summer's negotiations were productive. For WHYY News, I'm Bill Hangley.
If you want to help Philadelphia Congressman Shaka Fatah out with his attorney bills as he battles federal corruption charges, there's a new, quick and easy way to do it. WHYY's Dave Davies reports on Fatah's online appeal for contributions to his legal defense fund.
Fatah's taken advantage of a practice governed by the House Ethics Committee and set up a legal defense fund. It has to report its donors quarterly, but Fatah says it allows him to tap a broader base of donors than his regular campaign committee.
This could be any corporation, any business, any church, any organization that you could imagine can legally give to the legal fund.
Public officials can use their campaign funds to pay legal bills. A legal defense fund is arguably cleaner, since donors know they're helping the congressman out of a legal jam rather than giving to his campaign. Stanley Brand, a defense attorney experienced in these cases, says, yeah, but...
I guess from a practitioner's standpoint and someone who's been a recipient of some of those monies, myself, I always think it's easier to raise campaign money and then explain to people that this is obviously critical to your being reelected, that is to defend yourself against these charges.
Donations to a legal fund are limited to $5,000 a year. That's nearly twice the limit for campaign contributions. Noah Bookbinder of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington says, in truth, politicians look to core supporters for all kinds of help.
This allows them to hit up the same people multiple times because they can max out their campaign donations and then max out their legal fund donations.
Bookbinder finds it a little curious that Fatah placed the donation links for his defense fund and his campaign fund on the same web page. Fatah says this way his supporters can choose how they want to help, since he does plan to run for re-election next year. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Catholic parishes and universities are starting to incorporate the Pope's landmark encyclical on the environment into their teachings and day-to-day operations. The 180-page document released by Pope Francis in June says climate change is man-made and the poor will suffer the most from it. But the Pope's teaching has been divisive, and Francis is expected to sell his stance to world leaders in the U.S. later this month. WHYY's Carolyn Beeler reports.
The Catholic Diocese in Orange County, California, was the first in the country to hold a conference on the Pope's encyclical last month. And it turned out to be a good illustration of how American Catholics are reacting in very different ways to the document. The question and answer session at the end of the conference was interrupted when an audience member stood up and yelled in protest.
I'm going to advocate for traditional Catholicism.
When the man refused to leave the auditorium, the rest of the audience stood up to drown him out with the Our Father.
We're going to pray the prayer, Heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
As this scene shows, the document has become a wedge between conservative and progressive Catholics. The Pope gets specific in the encyclical, writing about air conditioners as electricity hogs and recommending energy-efficient repairs to buildings. Father Robert Sirico with the Acton Institute, a think tank that advocates for free market economics informed by faith, calls that level of detail on scientific topics unwise for a theologian.
Should in 25 years or in 50 years we discover that some of these specific policy prescriptions were not the best, then the church gets tagged with all of that.
Sirico is not alone in his opinions. The Pope's favorability rating dropped significantly from early 2014 to this July, shortly after he released his encyclical. But at 59%, that favorability rating is still high. Dan Misla of the group Catholic Climate Covenant argues protesters make up a small, if vocal, minority.
I think many more Catholics are encouraged. I think they're pleasantly surprised or happy that he's speaking out.
Misla says the climate change conversation has changed fairly significantly with the release of the encyclical. In July, the Archdiocese of Chicago became the first in the nation to work with federal regulators to track its buildings' energy use, water consumption, and greenhouse gas emissions. In August, the Archdiocese of Cincinnati announced it, too, will use less energy.
There's lots of things like that happening, far more than we can keep track of.
The encyclical will be the focus of a panel discussion and a core text for a sustainable engineering class at Villanova University this fall. The school's engineering dean, Gary Gabriel, says the Pope's focus on the interconnectedness of humans and the Earth has reinforced an idea that engineering students should be learning more than just science and math.
Engineering impacts the world in so many different ways that our students, as part of their education, need to understand that. And that's clearly a very, very strong theme in the encyclical.
Even as his messaging starts filtering through Catholic institutions, Pope Francis has a lot of ground to cover with the general public. A month after he released his encyclical, fewer than a third of Americans knew climate change was a priority issue for this pope. The percentage who saw climate change as a moral or religious issue had not changed. So his care for creation theme is likely to be a significant focus of his upcoming U.S. tour.
He has invested his capital in this issue uniquely.
That's Rocco Palmo, author of the influential Catholic blog Whispers in the Loggia.
You know, he knows if care for the earth is going to be real, it's got to come in the policy arena. So it's going to be probably one of the top two or three things he talks about.
Pope Francis is expected to urge members of Congress to act on climate change during his address in Washington later this month, and it's likely to come up during his speech to the UN the next day in New York. Climate change is not likely to be on his official Philadelphia agenda, but as Francis is well known for going off script, Palmo says it's anyone's guess if he will pick up his care for creation theme in an impromptu way while here. I'm Carolyn Beeler, WHYY News.
Taking a look at today's headlines, the city of Philadelphia will begin towing cars in some parts of Center City on Sunday, September 20th at 6 p.m. through Wednesday the 23rd to accommodate construction of the secure perimeters for the papal visit. Mayor Michael Nutter says notices will go up on Monday.
Prior to the beginning of towing, residents are strongly encouraged, and I want to ask you personally to please park in any other legal long-term spot in the city. You can also check, of course, with friends and family to see if they might have room near their home and can keep an eye on your vehicle for that weekend.
The Philadelphia Parking Authority will offer no tow permits, which will guarantee you one of 2,000 garage parking spots. They'll go on sale for $20 starting Thursday, September 24th at 6 p.m. The Navy Hospital lot will offer 1,500 free parking spots. Pennsylvania's House Democratic Caucus is receiving nearly $2 million from the State Treasury Department to pay its workers after its money ran out because of Pennsylvania's budget impasse. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reports the Treasury has determined there's sufficient legal justification to pay legislative branch workers, even though the state's been without a budget since July 1st. A House Democratic spokesman says the money will be repaid once a budget is enacted. Taking a look at the forecast, still stormy tonight, with temperatures dropping to 65. Sunshine returns with a high of 85 tomorrow. Thunderstorms return in the afternoon on Saturday with a high of 83. Currently 74 degrees in Philadelphia, 76 in Wilmington, and 72 in Ocean City, New Jersey. Still ahead, a tale of how one family's efforts to bridge the language barrier between generations brings about a new dialect.
I've accepted this Laulish is how they talk to each other.
It's time for Story Corner as NewsWorks Tonight continues.
Mount Cuba Center supports WHYY and offers special, family-friendly programming on the second Saturday of every month. September 12th features Gardening for the Birds, with planting ideas and tips for supporting birds in your own backyard. Mount Cuba Center is a botanical garden located in Hockessin, Delaware, that promotes the conservation of native plants and the habitats that sustain them. Featuring native woodlands, a colorful meadow, tranquil ponds, and historic formal gardens. More at mtcubacenter.org.
If you're a pecan farmer, what's the best way to advertise your product?
You know, when you have a jingle, that can really give you extra memorability.
I'm Adrienne Hill, and who doesn't love a good pecan jingle? Next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Coming up next on WHYY.
Where can you test drive an electric car, sample local and organic food, hang out in a sustainable beer garden, or taste a cricket on a cracker? At the 10th Annual Green Fest Philly. 2015 marks the 10th anniversary of Philadelphia's largest environmental festival. Sunday, September 13th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Head House Square. More about Green Fest and how Philadelphia does sustainability at greenfestphilly.org. Green Fest supports WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Tom McDonald, in for Dave Heller. When Pope Francis arrives in Philadelphia later this month, more than a million people are expected to flock to events that include Sunday Mass on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To them, it's a moment of celebrating religious faith. But what about those who don't share that belief? To them, it's a mixed bag. NewsWorks blogger Brian Hickey spoke with local atheists about their views on Pope Francis' visit. He shared what he found out with NewsWorks Tonight host Dave Heller.
Brian, in sampling reaction from this cohort, was there a range of responses to the papal visit?
There was. I spoke with four atheists in the Philadelphia area, and what struck me about it was they have more of a detached view about an event that everybody within the Philadelphia hive mind is just nonstop panicking about. And while there were similarities between them, there were tendrils that broke off in each of my interviews. You have someone like Hugh Taft Morales from the Ethical Humanist Society on Rittenhouse Square. His worry is, are they expecting the Pope to change the world, or are they going to take his message and change it themselves? And that's his biggest concern. And then you have someone like Margaret Downey of the Free Thought Society. When I spoke with her at her home in Westchester, the conversation was based on economics in a lot of ways, and veering away from faith, so to speak. And her biggest concern, is, as she'll tell you, is making sure Philadelphia doesn't foot the bill for this.
The Freethought Society is a watchdog organization. So we'll be making sure that the promises to repay the city of Philadelphia for expenses related to the Pope's visit are fulfilled and by the responsible parties. We want to make sure that the bills that are incurred by the government are reimbursed fully. We'll probably need to use a right-to-know process, but we will stand strong to make sure those bills are paid by the responsible people and organizations.
Well, there are assurances that it's the World Meeting and Families that will pick up the tab for all related costs.
Absolutely, and she's hoping that happens, but she doesn't want to just rely on hope alone. And she said they're willing to do, as she said, Freedom of Information Acts or just requests for information.
Above and beyond the dollars and cents, is there any sense that this event will have value for the greater Philadelphia region above and beyond the specific duration of when the Pope is in town?
I met with a secular humanist named Paul Moffat over at the Arden a couple weeks ago, and I guess you would call him the Mr. Brightside of the group. He was excited about the visit. While it runs counter to a lot of his beliefs, he thought this was a great chance for the city of Philadelphia to showcase what it has become in the 10-plus years since he moved here. He said it's a much hipper place than it was. It's a lot more energized, and by bringing Pope Francis in here, that can only highlight great things that have been going on in Philly.
I don't hold it against anyone if they do have that capacity. Okay. for finding a God, and more power to them, because the community that it brings obviously can be very great, and being able to go to a certain place and having that community to fall back upon that have shared beliefs, that all sounds great to me, but I'm not a hypocrite and I never could be one. Who am I to judge? And that to me is great. You know, who am I to judge? Who am I to judge if you're Catholic or if you're Christian or you're whatever?
Paraphrasing Moffat here, he knows beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is no God. So while he may, I don't know, look at them cockeyed when they're out on the parkway celebrating Mass, he respects the fact that religion helps form a community amongst those who need it.
In summary, what's your takeaway? It seems like many of the misgivings, particularly pertaining to costs and logistics, are shared whether one's an atheist, a Catholic, or any other faith.
I think that's true. I think a lot of their concerns are echoed in the religious community, that people don't want to have to pay for all of this, and they don't want to have to not move their car at a fair amount. But that's belief structures don't have anything to do with that. That's just on-the-ground logistics. What I found most interesting is, to a person, they acknowledge that a lot of things that the Pope is talking about run directly akin to what their beliefs are, insofar as be nice to people. It's almost taking it right out of the Ten Commandments. Like, be nice to people. Do unto others as they would do unto you. Take care of the needy among us.
All in the context of the Pope's catchphrase of the year, who am I to judge?
Who am I to judge? And I think Paul Moffat said it best, that he's not going to hate on Catholics. He's going to let them believe in what they believe, just like he believes in what he believes.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
WHYY's Brian Hickey on NewsWorks Tonight.
Brian Hickey spoke with NewsWorks Tonight host Dave Heller. Whether you're a churchgoer or an atheist, what do you wish for the city? Better schools? Cleaner sidewalks? You can share your prayer for the city and see what others are asking for at whyy.org/popeinphilly. It's all part of WHYY's special coverage of Pope Francis' historic visit. Next, Katsi Villafan tells the tale of her household with three generations and three languages under one roof. It comes to us from First Person Arts Translation Slam, their first ever multilingual storytelling event held in June.
I speak two languages, English, obviously, and Lao. Language, especially for diaspora-born children, keeps us closer to a culture we may not be exposed to anymore, a country we may never visit again, and family members we may never meet. I live with my mom and daughter, Aditi. My mother speaks Lao, but very little English, and Aditi speaks English, but very little Lao. I was raised speaking Lao to my mom, so that is what I speak with her. With my daughter, I use English, because that is the language I am more fluent in, yet when they speak to each other, they use a completely different language, broken English.
Aditi, tell me about tomorrow, what you're doing for International Day.
We're going to bring food.
What kind of food?
Sticky rice, and we're going to make 25.
Who's making them?
My grandma.
Is she making it right now?
No, she's going to make it at 9 o'clock tomorrow.
Can you ask her what she's doing right now?
Okay. What do you do right now?
I clean everything. You don't hold me clean, okay? To my 30.
She said she's cleaning.
I'm gonna ask Grandma something. Ma, do you clean?
Clean,
huh? Oh, okay.
Clean table, clean kitchen, everything clean, okay?
So technically, broken English
is not a language. It's still English, just with an accent and a few extra grammar rules removed. For people like my mom, it is speaking English the best way they know how. For my daughter, listening to her navigate between the English she uses with me and the version she uses with my mom is an obvious attempt for her to relate. The broken English my daughter speaks is a well-observed imitation, a sound-for-sound copy of what she hears when my mother speaks. It's another means to communicate with someone, someone she happens to love. When my daughter was born, I had assumed that my mom would teach her to speak Lao as she had with me. At first, it seemed it was going that way. Aditi's first recognizable word was oi na, which is the Lao equivalent to the Yiddish oi vey. Her first English word, which showed up some months later, was meatball. But as time passed and watching cartoons became a daily habit, English soon surpassed Lao, and my mom gave in. There were a few factors as to why three generations living under one house do not share a common language, or why two of them choose a vernacular that isn't easy for either of them to speak. First, the transition between Lao to English can be tricky. Lao is a tonal language, so meanings are dependent on the tone. The Van Chen dialect, which my mother speaks, has six tones. At 6 years old, Aditi cannot differentiate this. Secondly, there is no need for Lao. When I was a child, as far back as I can remember, I was my mother's translator for everything. I share this trait with all children of immigrants. The third factor is my mom's hearing, which is going. She has a hearing aid, but doesn't wear it. More than a few conversations have turned into miscommunicated meltdowns because my mom could not make out the words Aditi was saying. I've asked my mom to do a better job of only speaking Lao to my daughter, but it's me who ends up translating for Aditi what my mom is trying to say. In the meantime, I've accepted this Laolish is how they talk to each other, this secret language amongst family that others try to duplicate but cannot decode. There's some folks who tell you, I love yous are for white people. But to that, I say, bo kao chai, or as my mom and Aditi would put it, bo andasapan. Thank you.
That's Katsi Villafan performing at First Person Arts. She's a Philadelphia-based spoken word artist who focuses on the preservation of the Lao culture and history among area refugees. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov and Kimberly Haas, with help tonight from Alex Lewis. You can listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Some Philadelphia neighborhoods are feeling under siege from development, so the City Planning Commission is offering classes to help residents navigate the planning process. We'll hear more on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom McDonald for NewsWorks Tonight.